Well, if you own a Macintosh computer or if you've considered owning one, I'll tell you what, you've got a good show coming up here. Joe Rhodes, who's a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been doing Macs professionally since 1999, unprofessionally for more years than that, and has been with us a few times now. We've had a lot of fun talking with him about Macintosh computers, and certainly if you have a question about them, maybe you've got a problem with them, maybe you want to wonder about some of the new things that are come out with from Macintosh, we hope you'll join in, and here's the number to call. It is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call or send us an email, and we'll get you right on here. Joe Rhodes, welcome back.
Hey, great to be here.
What are you seeing in the what are people coming to you with their Macintosh concerns right now?
Well, you know, I got an interesting one a couple of times this last week, and I thought, you know, maybe I can share this on the air with people.
Sure.
For those of us that use Apple's built-in mail client, it does a couple of nice things, like when you type in someone's address, it remembers that. And it's really helpful because then the next time you go type it in, you just have to hit a couple letters and it brings it right up and you're good to go. The problem becomes when you're like me and you have very thick fingers. The first time you type it in wrong. And then the mail program helpfully remembers that wrong address. And then the next couple times, you type in the first couple letters and you aren't paying attention and it grabs the wrong one. And then your email bounces and you're scratching your head going, why isn't this sending? I've done this before. The answer is that, like I said, mail remembers everything that you've, everyone that you've sent mail to because it figures you might do it again. And if you go under the window menu, there's an option called Previous Recipients.
Ah.
That will show you a list of everyone that your Macintosh has remembered that you've sent mail to. And you can search that list. You can get rid of people that either are wrong or have the wrong address or whatever it is. If that list starts to get too long, sometimes that whole process of automatically completing will slow down, especially if you have an older computer. Mm-hmm. So you can sort that list by date and maybe clean everything out that's, you know, 3 years old or older. Because if you haven't emailed them in 3 years...
Right.
So, yeah, that actually can kind of clean that up. And that's, you know, between that and your address book, those are the two places where those addresses come from. And, yeah, for some reason, I got a bunch of calls on that same topic all at once.
Tell you what, lots of callers online. Let's go to the phones. Jeff in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. Thanks. I just got a MacBook laptop. It's the first Mac I've had in 20 years, so I'm having a little difficulty adjusting from PC to Mac.
Okay.
And there's a very simple operation that I'm so far unable to do, and that is I do all my emailing through a Yahoo email account,
mm-hmm.
and just attaching a photograph that I have in my, you know, in my photos section on the MacBook to an email that I want to send to somebody. Can you tell me how to do that?
Oh, yeah. Now, are these photos in the iPhoto application?
Yes.
Okay. iPhoto actually keeps its photos in a folder that's very organized for iPhoto, but not very organized for humans. And so what you're probably running into is when you hit the little attach button, you can't find where that picture is. It's not
exactly
immediately obvious.
Yeah.
The simplest way to do this is go into iPhoto, take the picture or pictures that you want to work with, and just click on them and drag them over to your desktop, and then they will turn into normal, everyday, ordinary files sitting on your desktop. Then when you're in Yahoo, you can hit attach, navigate to your desktop, and there they'll be.
Okay.
That's
so simple.
That's a simple way to do it.
The whole point of iPhoto is rather than have to sort through all the individual files, of which we can have thousands, iPhoto kind of handles all that in the background in a very efficient manner, and it just presents you with the actual pictures because we can do what humans do best. We look through the pictures and identify the ones we want.
Exactly. Okay. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Joanne in Milton, hello to you.
Fine, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have never used a Mac before, but I have been looking at getting a Mac Mini and upgrading the memory mm-hmm. to at least 1 gigabyte. Now, my question is this. I would like to have parallel operating systems, namely the Mac and then Linux, because I would like to learn Linux. Is this a good idea, a not-so-good idea, or will it slow down the operating systems considerably?
Well, you know, you've asked someone who loves Macintosh and Linux that question, so you're going to get a biased answer.
Oh, okay.
First off, I believe, and I could be wrong, I'm going from memory, I believe the Mac Minis start out with 1 gigabyte of RAM. If you want to run two operating systems, I do recommend upgrading it to two.
Okay.
Because you're literally running two computers at once.
Yes, I see. And
you probably want a little application called Parallels, which will let you run both at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And what I will tell you is that while you're running both at the same time, the Mac will slow down. Because it's doing double duty. I mean, it's you know, that's expected. But when you're not using Linux or Windows or whatever you happen to install, and you can put multiple on there, when you're not using it and you have it turned off, it does not slow down your Mac. So if you spend the bulk of your time, you know, doing your email, doing your web, doing your Photoshop, whatever you do with a Mac, it'll be fine. And then when you fire up Parallels, or I think there's a new one now by VMware, you'll be able to, you know, go into your Linux environment and learn and do all that neat stuff. And then when you turn it off, your Mac is back up to full speed. So while you're running both, it does slow down, yes.
So, and then if I got DSL and had my, I'll keep Mac on all the time, then I guess, or at least when I'm running to, just be in... without closing down my computer, just have the online running. Is that an okay thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. If you're not using the computer, it's not going to be doing anything in particular. And most of the time when you have a DSL, like if you get it through AT&T or TDS, they usually include a firewall with it. If you're getting a Charter cable modem, I would go out and get a $70 firewall. And that just kind of keeps you from being visible to the net at large when you're not using your computer.
Okay.
The only other thing is, you know, just consider, you know, power consumption. I'd probably put your Mac to sleep so you don't have to use up extra electricity.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling, Joanne. And on to Kate in Milwaukee. Hi, Kate.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask you, I'm a photographer who's been going to go into the digital world pretty soon here, and I wanted to be able to use my photography skills by getting a Mac.
Okay.
My husband has a PC, and it just frustrates me that it's so hard to use. So where do I start? I basic question.
Well, let me ask you this: you want to start? Are you a professional photographer, or
yes,
is this? Okay.
I do semi-professional. I do black and white photo of children on the side. So
okay.
Right now, I'm having it printed off black and white, which is beautiful. But I need to have for other purposes, for advertising purposes. You know, doing those kind of things, quick digital.
Sure. And are you asking about, like, what kind of hardware you're thinking about or what kind of software you need to get going with this?
What computer to start with, so hardware and then software, obviously Photoshop, that kind of thing. So
yeah, I was going to say Photoshop is really kind of the staple of image editing software. Apple has a program out there called Aperture. And it's not so much a Photoshop competitor as much as it's a Photoshop companion. And it's designed to do workflow. So if you go to a photo shoot and you take 1,000 pictures, how do you organize 1,000 pictures, scan through them, flag the ones you want, hide the ones you don't want, et cetera. And so that's kind of what Aperture does really well. It's kind of like iPhoto on steroids. So those are two applications, and honestly, I mean, you asked an incredibly large question, so
yeah.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to refer you to some products and have you go do some homework on those.
Yes, that would be great. Thanks.
So those are two products I would look into and search the web and find some reviews on.
Okay.
And as far as hardware goes, if you've got a high-end digital camera, these can take some pretty spectacular pictures, but these files are big. So I would probably aim towards Apple's professional line. So if you're looking at a laptop, I would look at the MacBook Pro as opposed to the MacBook.
Okay.
And if you're looking at desktops, I would either look at a high-end iMac or maybe even a Tower, although I think the Tower might be a little overkill. But those new high-end iMacs have a lot of horsepower. I'd probably avoid the Mac Mini because, you know, working with Photoshop and Aperture, these are big programs that need horsepower.
Do a desktop. And then one more question. What kind of printer would you get? Just a high-end printer? Or do you have to get a Mac printer, or can you get any printer then?
You can get pretty much any printer that's supported by Mac OS X, although I will tell you, you just hit my knowledge black hole. I know so little about printers. I know how to make network printers work, but when it comes to like doing good digital photography and getting a good print-off, I'm not really much of an expert. So I'm going to point you to the web and Google.
Okay.
And that one I'm going to have to leave up to you to do some legwork on, because I just don't know.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much for answering my questions.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Karen in Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi to you. Oh, hold on just a second, Karen. Let's see. We'll get there. There. Now we're going. Hi, Karen.
Okay. I have two very quick questions.
Sure.
I have maybe about a four-year-old flat screen iMac with 800 megahertz power PCG4 and 256 megabytes of memory.
I was working on one of those yesterday.
I just love this computer.
They're cute.
My first question is, it came loaded with Internet Explorer, and I want to make Safari my default web browser, and I don't know how to do that.
Let me ask, do you know what version of Mac OS you're running? Are you running Mac OS 9, 10?
I had OS, I think, 2.8, but I just received in the mail Tiger, which is 10.4.
Okay, great. Because macOS,
I haven't even installed it yet.
With macOS 10.2, I can't quite remember. But macOS 10.4, it's actually not too difficult. You open up the Safari application,
okay.
And this is after you've installed macOS 10.4,
yes.
Which that'll take you maybe an hour or two.
Okay.
After you install macOS 10.4, you open up Safari, and under the Safari menu, there's an option that says Preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of those sections, and they'll be pretty easy to find, you will find one that says Default Browser.
Okay.
And then you get to pick from a drop-down list. Do you want
be
IE, Safari, Firefox, what have you?
Okay. And I can just leave the Internet Explorer on there.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I usually do, because every once in a great while, there's this one random page that only works with IE.
Sure. Okay. Then my other quick question is, I don't know what kind of software I need to watch videos that come through email.
Mm. And, that's a tougher question than you would think, because it all depends on what kind of video it is that someone sent you or that you downloaded.
Oh, okay.
The stuff that you're watching on, say, a site like YouTube, well, that's all included with your web browser plugins, and so that's easy. Sometimes people will send you a Windows media file.
Oh, okay.
And with the older Macs, if you go to Microsoft.com/Mac, that's their Mactopia website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You will find a link, and you might have to dig around for it, for a Windows Media Player for Mac.
Yeah.
So that will let you open those Windows Media files, and the rest of them hopefully are open by QuickTime. But there's still a couple files. They're just oddball that, who knows how they encoded them, and you may or may not be able to play them. And even I run into those, and at some point I just scratch my head and go, well, it wasn't that important.
Good enough. Thanks, Karen. Joe Rhodes, our guest today, Macintosh support specialist from Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking Macintosh computers and software now with Joe Rhodes, a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. Really glad to have him with us today, Larry Mueller here. And certainly if you have some questions, we hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And Joe, you've kind of got even a little special spot for us on the web there, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got a weblog specifically for Wisconsin Public Radio, and that's at my website, which is joerhodes.com/WPR. My last name is actually spelled R-H-O-D-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
And just go joerhodes.com/WPR, and I've got a whole bunch of articles on there of things we've discussed on the radio or things people have asked me that keep coming back up, and I can go into them in a little bit more detail and with pictures, which mm-hmm. is hard to do over the radio. So for mm-hmm. those of you that like to follow along graphically, that's a good resource for that.
joerhodes.com/WPR. That's the place to go. And let's go to Tina now and see what's on Tina's mind. Hi, thank you for calling from Marinette.
Tina.
Tina. Oh, sorry. I have one friend who is, the name spelled as T-I-N-A, pronounces it Tina, and another that pronounces it Tina. So I'm never sure.
No problem. I have a question. I have a PowerBook G4,
okay.
And included in all that software is the IDBD. What I have a camera, I have a Sony Handycam, and I'm interested in using some of the IVD software, but that's not compatible with the PowerBook and the IDVD, is what I understand. So I'd rather not spend money on another camera. I'm wondering if there's like an external drive or something that I could do some burning or copying with, and then
sure.
I don't
I can't speak specifically for the Sony Handycams because I've not run into them. I have run into one camcorder that decided it was going to store its video in a very proprietary format, and unless you used their stuff, you couldn't work with it, and of course their stuff only worked on a PC.
Okay.
Have you tried connecting the Sony Handycam directly to your Mac via FireWire?
I'm going to... Well, no, my battery is going to die on my phone, and it says it won't take a FireWire. So.
Oh, okay. So
I'm
it won't.
For, yeah.
It won't take FireWire.
The camera won't take FireWire. Yes.
All right. Well, let me throw some generic suggestions at you before your battery dies.
Okay. Great,
you'd have to go through Sony's documentation and see if they have some method of getting that video off of there or burning it to a DVD in a generic form or, you know, I don't know. And if their only way is USB, and boy, I hope that's not the case because that's really slow.
Right. Okay.
Newer Macs have faster USB, but it's still not as fast as FireWire. I think you'd have to look at Sony's documentation, see if there's some way you can get the raw video off of it. And once you get the video onto your Mac, then you can work with it in iMovie, edit it,
okay,
compile it down, and then burn it to DVD and put the nice menus and all that kind of stuff in there. But yeah, I agree. It's going to be a little tricky getting that video off of the camera without, you know, if Sony only makes it available via USB or only to PCs, it might be kind of stuck.
Okay. How about good suggestions for cameras that are compatible with the Mac and the...
Oh, you know, I'm going to have to plead the same thing I did with printers. I don't even have a digital camera,
camera,
much less video camera, so I don't know.
Okay.
I'm
all
sorry.
Right. I'll just do some digging, though. But
I would actually look at Apple's website, and if you're a connoisseur of iMovie and iDVD, they'll probably have a list of supported cameras. And that's certainly not an exhaustive list, but it'll certainly give you a great place to start looking. And Macworld.com frequently does reviews of cameras and products like this.
Okay,
and that might be a good place to get some people who have tested, you know, 12 of these things up against each other, and they'll give you the pros and cons of each.
All right. I'll try the Macworld.com then.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much, Tina, for calling. Appreciate it. Lois in Wausau. Hi.
Hey, Lois.
Hi. I have two Macs that need some help, and I'd like your opinion. The first one I've had for a couple of years, it's the iMac with the dome base that has the swivel screen.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love. It's a great computer. It's got great speakers. But it really needs some upgrading. Right now I have OS 10.3.9 and 512 megabytes of memory. And I was just wondering how much could I upgrade it to make it, you know, spiffy like a new one?
Oh, yeah.
And is it worth it?
Well, here's what I can tell you, and this is actually fairly hot off the presses. I read this morning. The newest version of Mac OS X, which is version 10.5, is going to be out by the end of October, which by Apple's clock, that means October 31st at 11:59. And the cutoff point for machines that it will support is anything with a G4 running 867 megahertz or faster.
Okay, mine only has 700 megahertz.
Right, which means, and that's a lot of those first generation iMacs with the G4 is what I call the desk lamp iMacs because they have that reticulating arm, a lot of those machines aren't going to make the cut, which means the best operating system that you'll be able to put on your iMac is going to be macOS 10.4. So that's from a software standpoint. If you want to be with the latest and greatest, macOS 10.4 is as far as that machine will go. From a speed perspective, I'm not aware off the top of my head that you can upgrade the processor itself in those machines. And if you could, it would be, you know, some pretty intricate surgery.
Mm.
What you can do that will give you a boost is you can put some more memory in it. But even that, you're kind of, there's an upper limit to it. There's two chips in the machine, but one of them is buried deep inside the bowels of that little half hemisphere. The other one is user accessible. And if you've got 512 in there, you probably already have, because they shipped with 256 megs,
right,
you know, inside of it, and then they had an open slot, and you probably have a 256 meg chip in there. I think the biggest chip you can put in that slot is you can take out the chip you have in there and put in a 1 gigabyte.
Oh.
So you can have a maximum of 1.25 gigabytes. I'm fairly certain that's correct.
That sounds pretty adequate, huh?
And more memory definitely makes Mac OS X go faster, especially when you start getting a couple applications open, like your web browser, your email, and iPhoto. So between macOS 10.4 and some more memory, that will push that machine as far as you'll really be able to go with it.
Okay. And it's probably worth doing that?
You know, depends on how heavy you're going to be using it. If you're the casual home user, if you're what I'm going to put in the category of my mom, you know, doing web, doing some pictures, stuff like that, I think that machine has a couple more years left of good life for you.
Okay, good.
If you're, you know, planning on tackling digital video, then no.
Okay.
Because digital video is a whole big thing. But a lot of people, we're just, you know, we're still getting used to emailing our photos and things like that. So.
Right. And then just very quickly, I also have an iBook G4 that's a couple of years old.
Okay.
And I always kept it plugged in and charging.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to notice that, I call it its heartbeat, that little pulsing white light, you
mm-hmm.
know, just was sort of fading. And the part that glows green where you plug it in,
mm-hmm.
That no longer works. So basically it's sort of dead. And I'm just wondering, do you think can I revive it?
I'm not sure, because those both sound like kind of hardware-type issues. Is the machine really going to sleep when you close the lid? I mean, can you hear it, like the hard drive turn off and things like that?
Well, I can't even get it to wake up anymore. I can't.
Oh.
Oh.
I know.
Well, that sounds like it's completely run out of power, and for whatever reason, when you plug that power adapter in, it's not working. Now, there's a couple things you can try. If you have somebody who has a PowerBook or iBook, not the new ones, but the older ones, see if you can borrow their power adapter and plug it in and see if the little ring glows. It's possible that your power adapter has died.
I'm thinking and if that's probably what it is.
And if your power adapter has died, of course, the iBook can't get any power, the light
right.
won't glow, nothing happens.
So I need a new battery, if that's the case.
Well, you need a new power adapter, if that's the case. I'm talking about the thing you plug into the wall.
The power adapter.
The little box that you plug into the wall. My first thought would be, see if you can find someone who's got one and see if theirs will make your little ring glow, and if you can get the machine to power on. If it can, then just go get yourself another power adapter.
Okay.
If it can't, then you've got some hardware issues, and then if you can find a computer and get to apple.com/support, do a search for resetting the power manager unit. And I think it's a matter of, on the newer ones, it's a matter of taking the battery out, taking everything out, and holding down the power button for like 10 or 15 seconds. There might be a special button that you on yours that you have to hit with a paper clip.
Right.
But they have instructions for resetting the power manager. And that might kind of give the guy who's responsible for charging the battery, give him a kick. And maybe once he's had a kick, maybe he'll start working again. If that doesn't work, I'd try taking the battery out completely, plugging the thing in and seeing if it'll work just plugged in without a battery in it, in which case your battery would be defective. Although I can't imagine a dead battery would cause something to be that dead. My first thought is it's your power adapter, but if it's none of those, you have some kind of hardware, maybe there's a piece of solder that's broken and you might have to take it in for repair.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Calvin in Eau Claire, hi to you.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I'm on the road here. But my question is really more of I got an old Mac.
Okay.
It's back in 95 I brought it, right?
All right.
What I want to do is, I've already asked about upgrading it, but they don't want, they're not going to, he said that I may as well go out and buy a new computer because
mm-hmm.
it's that old.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is there any type of programs, anything that deal with Macintosh for the book? Because, laptop, because I want to get a laptop. And is it possible that I can transfer stuff from my old iMac onto a new laptop?
Sure. Transferring things is going to be a little tricky. If that computer is really from 1995 give or take a couple years, it's going to be a little tricky getting stuff off of there, but you should be able to do it. You might look around for, you said it is an iMac?
Yeah.
Your old one is an iMac?
It's an iMac. It's 660, I think it was back then.
Sure. If you can find yourself a like a USB zip drive or something like that, you're looking for something you can plug into the USB port. And actually, you can even use a USB hard drive. It's going to be slow, but you can do it.
Uh-huh.
And then you can, once you have that stuff onto that external drive, then you can plug it into a new Mac and you should be able to get it off without a problem. Didn't understand the question about the book. You're talking about writing a book?
No. What I'm talking about a laptop computer. I want to, I want to know which is a better, laptop. Because I like Macintosh. I've been following Macintosh back in the
80s.
Apple, with their portables, they've managed to keep things pretty darn simple and still give you a lot of choices. They've got two general styles you can buy. You can buy what's called the MacBook, which is targeted for consumers and people who are a little more cost conscious. Also good for schools. It's very durable, a little bit thicker. It's fairly, reasonably small. packs pretty good horsepower, but you know, it's kind of the no frills. Here's a good sturdy basic workhorse. And then for the people who really make their living with these things, they make the MacBook Pros, which are bigger. They come with either a 15 or 17 inch screen, and they're faster, and they have more more ways you can connect things to. They're just, you know, a little bit more powerful all the way around, because it's geared for people who are really counting on this to make it their livelihood. So you really kind of have to look at how you want to use it and look at the features each has. And actually, if you're in the Madison area, we have an Apple store now at Westtown Mall. It's very exciting. And you can go in there and you can get hands-on with these things and see, you know, okay, what's it got? And you can even make an appointment and have a one-on-one shopping, which I think, I haven't tried it, but I think it basically means you walk in there and you have a salesperson that's yours for the hour, and they answer every question you have about, you know, how you want to buy a new Mac.
Is there any 800 number, anything that you can call to talk to?
Oh, yeah. Go to apple.com, and you will find in their store section, they have an 800 number right on the store section. I think it's 1-800-MY-APPLE.
1-800-MY-APPLE.
I think that's it.
I think that's it, too.
Going from memory. But if you can get to apple.com/store, it'll be right there on the page.
.com/store.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And good luck with your new Mac. And Kim in Spring Valley, it's your turn. Hi, Kim.
Hi there.
Hi, Kim.
First of all, my PowerBook G4 that runs at 133 gigahertz isn't going to make that cut, huh?
I don't know of a PowerBook that runs at 133. I know that runs one that runs at 1.3 gigahertz.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's
you're going to make the cut, actually, because a gigahertz is 1,000 megahertz.
Oh, okay.
So if you have an 800 megahertz processor, you have a 0.8 gigahertz processor.
I see.
So you're above that limit, so you're going to be able to make the cut, yeah.
Oh, that's encouraging. Okay, I have a complicated security question.
All right.
I have a satellite feed on DSL. I've got all my firewalls on.
Mm-hmm.
I've got their password. I've got my own password, but I'm still getting attacked. I gave up on the airport because I was getting attacked, but I'm even when I plug it into the Ethernet cable,
mm-hmm.
I'm still getting attacks. I think I know just enough to be dangerous, but when I look under some of the logs, there's stealth attacks, blah blah blah, and I think they're even able to write Linux commands. Is there a Linux command I can put on there? I don't know Linux. To shut off those attackers, or am I just nuts?
Well, no, I'm not going to say you're nuts. That's I'm not exactly clear of what it is you're talking about, but let me take a couple stabs at this. You have a satellite internet connection?
Correct.
Okay. And then so that comes in, and it probably goes to a little box with something that goes off to your TV and then something that comes to your computer, right?
Correct.
Okay. And do you have that cable plugged directly from that box into your computer?
Yes.
Okay. And then on your Mac, you in the sharing preference pane, you have the firewall turned on, correct?
Yes.
Okay. There's not much you can do to stop people from trying to attack you, although the Mac, I mean, there's people, and some of them are not actually even attacks. Some of them are just random computers that are on the logical network with you. Even though physically they're nowhere close to you, they might logically be on the same network.
Okay.
And they're just kind of scanning to see who else is out there. I mean, computers do this all the time. It's how they find other computers. So your Mac is just registering any attempt whatsoever when you look through the log files.
Okay.
The good news is, if you've got that firewall turned on, nothing's going to make it past that unless you specifically allow it. So if you have file sharing turned on, then people would be able to connect to your file sharing service. But if you don't have it turned on, then the firewall won't even allow it in. So you're pretty well insulated in that case. And the other thing you can kind of relax is at the present, I can't say this is always going to be the case, but at present, there are no known exploits for Mac OS X out in the wild. There's some proof of concepts, but there's nothing actually circulating in the wild. Chances are what you're seeing are people are trying to, they don't know what kind of computer it is, and they're trying some well-known Windows exploits to see if it'll work.
Okay.
And of course your Mac is saying, yeah, sorry, got nothing. And as far as Linux commands, Linux is a different kind of operating system, and it's Mac OS X has something similar called Unix, but they're not on your machine. But the good news is someone cannot run a command on your computer from remote through your firewall.
What about Unix? They can't come in that way.
They can't come in. Because, again, Unix is, like anything else, all of its stuff is being protected by your firewall. And if you want to be, if you want to have a...
They can't come in through a subnet or anything.
Nope. And if you want to have a belt and suspenders kind of approach...
Yeah.
What you could do is you can go out to Best Buy or CompUSA and get yourself one of those little $70, $80 home routers.
Okay.
And then you plug the cable from your satellite into that... That acts as one firewall, and then you plug another cable from that into your laptop, and then you have two firewalls.
Perfect.
So that's, you know, like I said, belt and suspenders, but doesn't hurt.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Fred in Lakewood, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hey, great show. Yeah,
thanks.
I'll try to be quick. We travel a lot, and we want to access our mail through places where there's wireless. Now, I can get to the ISP server level, and I can see my mail up at the server. But when I turn on the mail program and tell it to get mail, it tries for a long time, and then it says, sorry about that. So there's some switch I got to change, and I don't know what it is.
Sure. Now, when you say you can go onto your ISP's website and see your mail, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, when I go to I have AT&T.
Okay.
And when I go to the homepage and I click email, then it asks me for some passwords, and then I can go see what mail is available to download. And I can do all this at the place where the Wi-Fi is working.
Okay. But when you actually go into the mail application itself, it tries, and then after some time, it gives you an error message of some sort.
Yeah.
What's that error message? Do you know?
Oh, no. There's not an error message. It just stops. It's as if I wasn't connected.
Huh.
I don't have an error message.
The first thing I would do, it sounds like maybe there's two things you set up in the mail application. One is your incoming mail server, and one is your outgoing mail server.
Yeah.
The outgoing mail server, believe it or not, is slightly more complicated because of how the internet grew up, and there's some security issues. But my first thing I would do is I would go to AT&T's webpage, and I would find out what exactly their mail services are supposed to be. Because I think recently... AT&T, Yahoo specifically, I think they increased the security levels, and you have to have a certain security checkbox clicked.
Okay.
So what I would do is I would go to their help page, and you're going to have to do a little bit of digging around,
sure.
But I know it's there. Find the appropriate settings that you need, and then go in your mail application and make sure those settings all match.
Okay, I may have the old ones in and going.
You may have the old one, and it might be that when you're on a non-AT&T network, they just say no. I know specifically there's one checkbox you're looking that says SSL. And I know recently they required the use of SSL. And
that's a security. That's a good
right.
Encryption
SSL
level.
Means it encrypts everything between your laptop and their servers. And that's actually it's a great step for them. But because they hadn't been doing it for years, it confused a lot of people because suddenly now they say you have to. So I would check their webpage, and it should be reasonably quick to find it, and then just make sure that your settings match that.
Okay.
My hunch is you probably have something that's not quite right between the two.
Yeah, when I go through a phone line, of course, I dial directly into their server.
Mm-hmm.
So going through the Wi-Fi, maybe the name is not exactly right.
Yeah, and it could be they might be just more forgiving when you're directly on their network than when you're coming from somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay, so the AT&T help page, just kind of search through it for...
Yeah,
for,
and do, like, kind of search their page for mail server settings.
Yeah, mail server settings. Good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And John from Mequon wonders, whenever he downloads an attachment from his email, it's renamed as secure and he can't open it.
Renamed as secure and can't open it. I don't know.
doesn't happen in the Firefox browser, but it does in others.
Really? I have to plead ignorance. I've not heard that one before.
I'm
sorry. I got nothing.
that's something.
I would say start a Google search. Put in the term of the application you're using. Like put in OS X if you're using Safari. Type in Safari if you're using Mail. Type in Mail. Type in download and then type extension and secure and see what web pages come up. I bet if this is a recurring problem, someone has seen it. And I bet if you Google search for specific enough terms. You'll probably find it. Yeah, Google knows everything, man. It's great.
Joe, and again, we can find out a lot of things on the site that you've put together for us, too. And what is that again? Go back through that again.
That's Joe Rhodes, JoeRhodes.com, and then go to /WPR, or look for I've got a WPR button right at the top. You can click that, too.
And they're going to find lots of articles and lots of great
information. Got a discussion forum on there if you want to start a discussion of your own. You betcha.
Joe, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit.
happy to be here. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joe. Again, that address is joerodes.com/WPR. Take a look. There's lots of good information there. And Joe Rhodes will be back with us and again, and we will definitely talk some more with him about Macintosh computers and accessories. Coming up tomorrow on the program, just to let you know, after 11, Phil Pelletieri, University of Wisconsin extension entomologist, is our guest. Somebody asked me the other day, when's Phil going to be back on? Well, I'll tell you what, he's on tomorrow. After 11, we'll talk about the wonderful world of insects. Thanks for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.